Good morning, everybody. This is IT Live, brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors. I'm Texas Homer. This is Ian Boyd next to me, and it's the Wednesday show, so we're going to talk schematics. First things first, we're going to talk about Texas's potential new defensive identity, losing some people in the secondary there, and how the pass rush can kind of shape what we want to do. And then at the end, we're going to do Texas A&M spring ball look ahead. Is Ian buying their rise? Because they should be better. And there's a lot of things that point to A&M being better, but Ian still has some questions as always. AR, good morning. Mr. 512, good morning. All right. Defensive identity. First, let's talk about what we had last year that we don't have anymore so far. And that would be biggest. The move from nickel to corner for Gilbo, losing Jahdae Barron, big deal, and then losing Makuba. So let's talk about what we had last year, why we were good, and how that could possibly change going forward. Ryan, Texas 8-4 will have a top 25 offense, but they will play dumb on defense again. AR, friends don't let friends become Aggies. There we go. Already a little.
Those are both tough.
Yeah.
A lot of people are noting that A&M has less NFL talent now because they had all these dudes left from Fisher, and now they're gone to the NFL or wherever. But there's a lot more to good defense than that.
Yeah.
And then, hey, it's hard to get into UT. So.
Yeah.
It's easy to see why people go to A&M. If you want to be at a top major in-state school.
They started going with the Arizona state strategy at one point, right? Where they were like, okay, well, we're just going to be bigger than Texas in enrollment size. So we'll see. We're not gonna make fun of A&M just yet. We're gonna talk Texas Longhorns defense. All right. So last year's defense, and then how's it gonna morph? Ian.
Texas. Okay. Jahdae Barron is gone. I was pulling clips for a show that me and LC are going to do explaining single high and two high defense. And I noticed this agonizing on rewatch play where Jahdae Barron nearly pick sixed Will Howard on this really well disguised play in the second half. But the pass was batted at the line of scrimmage. And so Barron, totally jumped the route. And Will Howard didn't realize he was playing the flat. But then when he goes for the ball, it, bounces short. And it's like, oh, too many things went right on that play.
Exactly. We batted the ball. Unfortunately, we were too good there, and it screwed up our potential at an interception.
It's tough. It was like Texas needed those points so bad. So Jahdae Barron is gone. That's tough. All of the defensive tackles are gone. That's tough. We'll get into how Texas will reshape things for that. But you have those obvious question marks, and then you have the obvious strengths with the return of Colin Simmons and Anthony Hill and a dozen other linebackers.
You have Gilbo going out to corner. We have some questions at safety. Our top line, I think we feel really good about the top line safeties, right? It's more about the depth after that. And then losing Makuba, man, one of my favorite players ever for Texas. So, but we do have an insane strength, which is if you combine that little arc around the front seven from end to linebacker, that could be easily one of the best in the nation when we're talking pass rush ability. So, we're able to list all the guys here. And, of course, we know Anthony Hill can blitz. But we also know Brad Spence from Arkansas can do edge-type things. And then LaFau is also a plus blitzer as well. So that little group of guys in the pass rush is pretty terrific. And then you have Michael Taft coming back, Jelani McDonald. And then Broussard was asked, someone asked him, can Derek Williams play nickel? And he's like, Derek Williams is a safety. So – they asked him that. I can't remember if it was a press conference or what it was, but he just said Sarkisian. Very clearly. Yeah, they asked Sarkisian. And he was like, Derek Williams is a safety. So to us, that's great because we're hoping that it's Taff, Williams as safeties, and then Jelani, if he will allow himself to spin down to nickel, because that's going to allow us to do a lot of cool things. So we know the top line's there. We're just worried about, you know, we rotate at safety a good amount. So that'll be my kind of question is what's the depth looking like? I don't have a crazy issue with our starters at safety.
If you go to this, if you scroll down to this, the benefit here is that Michael Taff is a really good run stopper. He can play in and around the box, make tackles. Jelani McDonald, same thing, only bigger, faster. And so if you have Taff as the strong safety in the boundary and McDonald as the star to the field, then you're going to have a million different plays where either of your guys that are hovering just like outside and above the box are really good run support players. And those are going to be like your first guys to get there when the other team runs the ball, if the linebackers and the defensive line doesn't control it. And so you just end up with like nowhere to go in the run game. And that's what Arizona State had really good guys in those two spots. They had Shamari Simmons and Miles Rouser, I think, are their names, hovering on either side in single high schemes, and Texas couldn't make anything in the run game. Anytime the ball would just like start to leak out in either direction, that guy would be there in an instant.
Then they would have Alford playing back.
Yeah, and then Alford, Xavion Alford is the deep safety, and he was an amazing tackler in the open field as well. Texas basically have that exact same sort of lineup here, especially if Derek Williams can play that free safety spot like they seem to anticipate that he will. Derek Williams is a deep safety. I understand why Sark is like, no, we're not moving him. It's when he's lined up way back and then he closes on a run or a short pass, his angles to the ball are terrific. His speed is terrific. He makes tackles. Like, he could be elite in that role.
Well, he has crazy range from coming down off the perch too. And if you're talking free safety, I mean, that's what you want. Because that's what you need, right? Like, look, we can probably lock you down here without anything getting to a free safety with Taff and McDonald. We're probably pretty safe there. But if someone does get loose, you're confident Derek Williams can get to him. And not necessarily in a chase down situation, like you're saying, he'll angle correctly and be able to stop it. So this is why the ideal structure we want here is Taff and Williams at safety, particularly Williams at in the high perch, and then McDonald down at nickel just because of his crazy athleticism. So that's kind of the structure that we're looking at. And we played a lot of cover three last year. Do you think that continues to be the case?
Well, let's get back to that.
Okay. What's the next structure here that you want to hit? Are these guys going to be able to cover down?
We'll come back to that.
You want to just not talk coverage right now? What would you like to talk?
Well, just to summarize the strengths of the team, they have unreal pass rush at both edge positions and with, like, I don't even know. They have, like, seven linebackers that can rush the passer. So their ability to get after you, obviously elite. Their ability to support from safety, potentially elite, especially if Williams comes back. And those are like the obvious, like, we're going to build around these strengths. Question marks. We'll get into coverage soon, I promise. If you scroll down a little bit.
Question mark.
All right, the first two, as I wrote, the first two things that you see where you have questions are defensive tackle, because the entire two deep is gone, and cornerback, because Jahdae Barron is gone. But the trick with off-season roster evaluation for most teams is that the most obvious problems, the teams know what the obvious problems are on their roster. So all of their strongest offseason moves are going to be designed to make up for it. And so a lot of times, like some teams, it's like, we lost our defensive tackle. We know we lost our good defensive tackle. We're going to do everything we can it doesn't matter. We're just not going to be good at defensive tackle. But Texas is different. They have such amazing resources. They have the transfer portal. So sometimes you have to look a little more downstream. And in Texas's instance, like defensive tackle is a potential weak spot. Well, we pulled Justice Terry out of Georgia with like money on a hook, like the guy in those old Geico commercials or whatever. And five transfer defensive tackles out of the portal. And then we replaced Jahdae Barron leaving at corner by moving Jalen Gilboa over there when they already had Kobe Black and Manny Muhammad coming back. So neither defensive tackle nor cornerback, they may not quite be as good as last year, but those are not obvious. They may not be what hurts Texas that much, because those are the areas that were obvious. Texas used all their resources to make sure those weren't a problem. The thing that I could see holding this team back is just the overall coverage quality on the back end. If you're just, especially like when they could play Makuba and Gilbo around Taft, Makuba and Gilbo were both like almost cornerbacks. And Gilbo was a cornerback. Sounds like he's, you know. And then Makuba was like more, he was a good tackler, but he was smaller coverage guy and played nickel.
And he had an incredible feel for routes and where to, how to screw up quarterbacks and get picks.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you had Barron. You could be looking at a marginal downgrade in coverage at almost every single position in the secondary. And in particular, that same Taft-McDonald pairing that we showed above is not the same as Gilbo-Makuba in coverage.
So I think people might push back on that. So we're just talking one-on-one. Jahdae Barron is a Thorpe winner. He's likely better than Jalen Gilbo. I don't think that's crazy. Malik Muhammad is still Malik Muhammad. Wash.
Well, he's probably better.
But you get what I'm saying. It's the same guy. Yeah. And then Taft is still in the same spot. Derek Williams has really good range. We'll have to see how he is in coverage. But Makuba in pass defense was awesome. You saw that by his interceptions. And then you had Gilbo, who's playing corner now, that was in the nickel. So you had a corner-type skill set in the nickel. McDonald's an incredible athlete, but he's coming from the safety room. So he's not like a corner skill set, which when we say a corner versus safety, we're talking about kind of man coverage-y abilities. Staying with a guy one-on-one, that kind of stuff. So that's what Ian's saying, even though there's kind of a natural, like, what do you mean there'll be a drop-off? If you just look at the actual positions change from personnel, we're likely not going to be as good as, like, hey, that's my guy type coverage.
Yeah, they're going to probably be better in support, more physical.
Bigger.
I think communication will be good because Taft is back and McDonald and Williams have played a lot of ball now. Thanks, Splendid Daddy. Good. Have a good flight.
Have a safe flight, dude.
Yeah, don't crash. Take command of the helm if necessary. But like man-to-man coverage in particular, maybe a little bit just in overall lateral coverage, it's just not, there's no way. Like McDonald would have to make a huge leap.
We had a really special secondary, like an all-time Texas secondary. Like,
it's possible, but it's just not likely.
Yeah, we just had a really special secondary last year. And not like I'm talking NFL draft rankings, but I'm talking intelligence, right? Because Barron's not the 6'3 corner, but it doesn't matter. He was so smart, dude, and still ran a 4-whatever. And then Makuba, like I said, undersized, didn't matter. Super smart. So that's kind of the difference. I think we got more athletic, like –
I don't think so.
I think we did. I think Derek Williams for Makuba.
No.
I do.
Well, I mean, like, maybe.
I think Makuba's intelligence and willing to hit, but it's, I think we're good there. I don't know about when Jahdae ran that 4-3. I don't know about that with Gilbo, but McDonald is a hell of an athlete coming down. So it's, I think we got bigger and more athletic. I don't think we're as smart.
They might be straight line speed, similar or better, but at, like, turning their hips and changing direction to cover ground, I doubt it. I think that's where you'll see it.
Well, I think I'm also admittedly thinking downhill. Like, if the ball in front of them, I think they're going to get there type of thing.
I would say probably no drop off downhill. And
I do agree. In pure coverage, yeah, I think it's going to be a worse.
The mass times acceleration formula will improve because I think the acceleration is similar with more mass.
Yeah.
But yeah, changing direction is different. Flipping your hips is different. Cohesiveness of last year's secondary was off the charts. I do think that this could be good again. Now, there could be some changes in communication or whatever with Dwayne Aquina and Mark Orfeh and Kinoto Hudson. Am I missing? They have one other guy that does a lot back there. Can't remember.
No, we brought in 50 guys.
Yeah. There's a chance some of that could be a little bit different. Maybe they lose some ground. Maybe they gain some ground.
I was going to say, that's the unknown, right? New coaching, too. So it's, you know, that can go either way.
Nansen and Aquina have worked together. It looks like PK is still the primary architect of the overall scheme. Even if Nansen
Year, man, you're like, it seems to be like hinting that there's a shadow coordinator out there.
Oh, it seems like Nansen. I have a suspicion that Nansen is extremely powerful in that room. Yeah. Plus, PK tends to be kind of deferential anyway.
Yeah.
But, anyway, there's some changes back there, but here's one potential weakness is that what we're about to get to, we have an ad coming up.
We sure do. Would you like me to?
Yeah, hit that ad, and then I'll explain the coordinator coaching thing and the potential weakness issue.
Cool. Academy Sports, y'all. In honor of your service and support for our country, Academy Sports and Outdoors is offering military and first responders 10% off your purchase, both in your local Academy and Outdoors stores and online, from April 27th through July 4th. Exclusions apply. Visit academy.com/discount for details. And get all your summer fun here, guys, now that it's getting hot in Texas. All right, Ian.
All right. So the way this all comes together, I think, is to summarize, you have probably good zone defenders, a gazillion pass rushers, extremely versatile edges.
Experienced linebacker play.
I think the way this all comes together, if you scroll down, is we get just a full dose of zone replacement blitzing. So I think they continue to major in match three, and they just bring a million different types of blitzes from that coverage. Now, match three, the way PK does it, the way Texas was doing it last year, which was extremely effective, in match three, it can be man coverage or it can be zone coverage. And it depends on the game plan, the opponent, the formation of the offense, the offensive tendencies. And you tell the players what the preference is going to be. Maybe you put it on their wristbands, and then you also trust someone like Anthony Hill or Michael Taff to communicate it to the team. Like, hey, the tight end is in the formation, so to this side we're playing man. They have a slot over there. They like to run RPOs. We're going to play zone over on that side. And then you blend single high man coverage and single high zone coverage. That's how match three works. The idea is that you get the best of zone or man based on whichever one you think will help you more.
It's also not fun for offenses.
And it's confusing.
Yeah.
That's great for this defense because they have all these safeties that we just said are probably going to be really good in zone, playing the ball in front of them. removing ball from man, right? Separating ball from man. Jalen Gilbo, I think, is a deep corner. He's probably a little better than in pure man a lot. Manny Muhammad can play pure man. So you're playing, maybe you're playing even more as a cover three than last year. And they already played a ton last year. Then you fire off a gazillion zone replacement blitzes as well. And the way zone replacement blitzes work is that you drop out usually one of the edges, maybe a defensive tackle, but probably not hard very often. You drop out Colin Simmons or you drop out Ethan Burke or whoever else is on the field. And then you blitz Anthony Hill or Leonga LaFau or the boundary corner or the star off the edge, or you drop the safety down and you blitz the safety. Texas had a couple auto blitzes last year, it seemed like, where they would blitz Taff off the edge. They did that to Oklahoma once and got a huge sack. But you drop seven into coverage no matter what. And it's like six guys that are normally in coverage plus a guy that normally isn't, like an edge. And then you still bring four pass rushers like you normally would. But it's three guys that would normally be in the pass rush plus a guy that normally isn't. And that's how zone replacement blitzes work. And Texas has dabbled in them since PK came to Texas because that was his big thing in Washington. I think this year we're going to see a lot more of it.
So in this example, we're dropping our jack out into the strong hook that Mike Anthony Hill would normally cover. What's the value of this? Why not have Anthony Hill out in coverage, who's clearly better in coverage than a jack?
Because Anthony Hill is an awesome blitzer. And if you can get him on the blitz in a way that the offense doesn't expect, it's times 1.5, times 2, times 3 in effectiveness.
Yeah.
Like Dungeons and Dragons or something. But it's very effective.
You can also do things where you like walk the mic up and show him blitzing. This is a remember when Auburn lost to OU? They were doing this when they dropped out. You can drop out into the hook where the quarterback's not expecting. Like you can say this H down here, like in these offenses that really like to throw this like quick slant, these easy access stuff. You can trick them and then drop into that flat at the last second with someone he's not expecting. And then get an interception too. So if quarterbacks aren't able to read it, you can take away some access throws in some fun ways. And young quarterbacks are still struggling to kind of really understand the replacement blitz, even though it's become a staple now.
Texas also, like against Ohio State by the end of the year, they were doing a little more of this than they had been. And they were also doing it with like Tampa 2 in quarters and not just cover 3. And so it's pretty rough. That's how the play that Jahdae Barron nearly pick sixed Will Howard. They were showing single high, I think, and then they dropped one dude way out into deep safety and dropped another linebacker to Tampa 2, and Jahdae Barron jumped the flat. And it was just like Ohio State was just getting whipped all over the field too badly, as it turned out.
It's hard, man. It's tough for quarterbacks now with all of this stuff going on. Like you said, the match coverage is paired with the replacement blitzes, all of that kind of stuff. But this is
what's coming for young Julian
Sane. Yeah. And so you're going to see corners drop to a deep third zone. Derek Williams is that F. He's going to drop to the post. And he's also going to have incredible range. So Derek can get to either outside corner if he needs to defend there too. Then you get LaFau able to drop. Anthony Hill is allowed to blitz. You have someone like a Burke who's long and tall dropping to a flats. He's still going to be hard to get a ball around. Then you're going to have Jelani McDonald on this H down here at corner. And he's going to be also able to have eyes on. And we've seen what Jelani can do interception-wise when he has eyes on. And then you have Taff lurking around down here. We know Taff is smart, can get his hands on the ball. But also, if they try to do any running out of this, you see how many good run defenders we have low down here. So, yeah, I think this is an interesting structure for what we have.
Here's the two caveats that people are going to complain ceaselessly about if and when this stuff doesn't work. Number one, Colin Simmons is going to drop into coverage quite a bit. Mm-hmm. So everybody just brace yourself now for the inevitable play where Ohio State picks up a big third and five and you see Colin Simmons out in coverage. And maybe the Ohio State picks up the blitz and they
convert. Why would you not have your best pass rusher pass rushing?
Yes, that's going to happen. Mm-hmm. It is inevitable. And people are going to hate it. That's one thing. The other thing that's going to happen is that with some people would prefer, if you're going to have an awesome blitzing team like this, to play tight man coverage. So the quarterback has to hold the ball longer and you can pile up sacks. PK does not think that way. The third down package does not work that way. PK would rather drop back into zone, take away everything that's really dangerous, and then the quarterback is either throwing underneath to somebody open in the flat or whatever, or he's trying to hold on to the ball and then he's getting sacked.
Yeah, so I think, let's say trying to force a check down to where everything is, and you have these athletes able to go forward now.
Inevitably, Texas will play some team that's well prepared for that, and the team is going to be dinking and dunking all the way down the field, and they'll have some degree of success with it, and everyone will be like, this is awful. Get up and cover those guys. Stop dropping back like this. So both of those things are going to happen. But I think this approach is going to be the best way to blend all of Texas's strengths. There's some bend don't break to it, mm-hmm. but that's usually smart in college football because teams won't be able to dink and dunk all the way to beat you. It's possible they'll be really good at playing tight man coverage, but I don't know if I see that in this personnel. Like that, to me, that seems like a potential weakness is trying to play tight man coverage all the time. I don't know if they're up for that.
Do you think Akina is going to have a word on man?
This is the thing. Maybe. Maybe. Akina is on board in general with. We'll see. I don't know. This is a potential pitfall.
Yeah.
I'm not totally sure.
Yeah. So that'll be the tricky part. So basically, to me, this is like carnival game style quarterbacking you have to play. And what I mean is like there's like a time limit. You know, there's like a ball and a bucket and it's moving. That's what kind of the zone is where it's like you're going to have to be back on because you know these pass rushers are coming. So you're still limited in time. But and if they're playing man, you might not even have the route to throw. But the defender is also not going to be eyes on the ball. This part, if you get like, you know, three-fourths of Jade's intelligence, you should be able to understand, okay, there's a slot here. It's third and six. They want that interior thing. They want that easy route. We're going to be pass rushing them quickly, so they're going to need to get the ball out. Now I'm in zone, but I have the opportunities to jump the ball here too. So hopefully we just have that kind of intelligence and field awareness and situational awareness, because you can get some interceptions if you sit in these zones. That'll be the big thing.
If you play man, you can also bring five more often instead of four. Because you can play with an extra guy. You only need six guys to have a deep safety and man coverage. Mm-hmm. And so that leaves five to rush the passer. You can also keep one back as a rat to read the quarterback's eyes, or as a spy, or whatever. We'll see. This is like Akina will mix in zone for sure, but he loves teaching man. So we'll see how that goes. I think they should maintain some institutional command of. Definitely Tampa 2, which I think they'll do. Definitely still quarters because they needed that to beat Ohio State. Well, they needed that to almost have a chance against Ohio State last year and to keep things mixed up. But I think they should keep match 3 and not just be all man but we'll see.
Of the, yeah, because of the man personnel. So you think there's a potential to be confused here where we say, like, Akina's like, I want to play man, but that's not necessarily our personnel strength, and then we kind of have a confused identity? Are you worried about that at all?
It's happened before.
Right. So, yeah.
It happened in 2012. In 2011, Manny Diaz got to Texas, and they played palms, quarters, most of the time. And they had, like, they had freshman Quandre Diggs. They had, I want to say, Carrington Bynum, the corner. And he, I think he was kind of young, too. So they played, like, two read most of the time, or they were bringing fire zone blitzes. And it worked awesome. And they had a great defense. And Manny Diaz was the talk of the town. Then for the next year, Dwayne Akina was like, all right, enough of that. Our guys are older now. And so their playbook was still ostensibly like a palms, quarters playbook. But you go over to the defensive back drills section, and all Akina wanted to do was focus on man. And so they kind of wrestled back and forth. And then finally in 2013, they were like, okay, we're just playing man coverage, fine. And then they got destroyed by BYU. Manny Diaz took all the blame in the media and from Mac Brown and got fired midseason. And then they brought in Greg Robinson. And the first game back for Greg Robinson was against, like, Ole Miss. I don't know how many people remember this. The first game back, Greg Robinson's, like, looking at the playbook, and he's like, all right, cover two, we got it. And they go out, and they play quarters, and they had no idea what they were doing, and Ole Miss obliterated them with RPOs. Then after that, what seems to have happened is that Akina was like, hey, dude, no, that we can't do that. Just try to fix things up front. I'll get the back end, and don't worry about it. And then for the rest of the year, Texas was either man or they were mixing it up with cover three. Greg Robinson fixed up the front a little bit, and they played passable defense for the rest of the year. And then still lost a couple big games, and Mac Brown was fired. And that was the last we saw of Dwayne Akina in Austin. And he's amazing, but all that did happen. So just keep it in mind.
Yeah. Yeah, I just don't want confusion. Whatever we decide, if you want to play man, just make sure it makes sense with our fronts, all that stuff. But I think zone will help too. And I really just like the idea of anything that gets Taff and McDonald down towards the line of scrimmage, I actually feel pretty good about.
One other caveat to that deal is that Nansen and Akina have worked together before and worked really well. And Steve Sarkisian is not Mac Brown at all. And if there's, like, if Pete Kwiatkowski is not Manny Diaz. So I don't think things are going to go sideways. But it is interesting to see how they blend the preferred philosophies with stuff like this.
Cool. What do you think about our third down kind of dime packages, six DBs on the field? How do you think that's going to work?
The same. I think it'll be the same.
Who's going to be the sixth DB?
I think they would like to have a role for Jonah Williams. He's a freak athlete. With every passing week of the baseball season, I've been getting more and more nervous that this dude is going to realize he could make like $1 billion playing professional baseball.
Yeah.
And not bother with this violent war game that we
need. Knee-destroying game.
Knee-destroying. Yeah. Do you want to make 30, 40 million, have nothing to do after the age of 32, and be barely able to move for the rest of your life? Yeah. Or play baseball until you're 38, keep your legs, keep your joints, and make $1 billion?
Mm-hmm. And then the worst thing you got to deal with later in life is, like, your shoulder hurts.
I used to get flack from OU fans because I was so sure that that Kyler Murray would choose the baseball path. But he wasn't as good at baseball, I don't think, as Jonah Williams. He seemed like he was extremely talented at it, but it wasn't quite as realized as Jonah Williams.
I don't know. I'm such a charlatan in baseball.
And then, I'm just going off what, like, people were saying. And I was like, is he really going to pass up hundreds of million dollars to play football? No. He played football and he still made hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah.
But Jonah Williams is not a quarterback. So
that's the difference, right? Jonah Williams is a safety. And so that's a little bit different. Even if he was a corner, there'd still be a better thing. But yeah, a safety won't make as much as a baseball player.
No. Even like, I wonder what Ed Reed's lifetime earnings were.
Well, and Jonah's a freak athlete on the football field, but I mean, he's a freak athlete on the baseball field, you know? So it's, yeah, it's that thing too. We'll see, man. He's got a couple years. What do you got to do? Be 21 or 3 years or whatever?
Who's the best safety in football now? What's Kyle Hamilton's contract?
Just Google highest paid safety. Because that's going to be the trick.
Kirby Joseph signed a 4-year, $86 million contract extension with the Detroit Lions. Is that the guy from West Virginia?
Joe says Kyler was the 9th overall pick in the 2018 MLB draft. So higher.
That's really high.
Yeah.
But that was but to make $1 billion, you have to actually be good. Yep. Like your draft level in baseball is not, they have a development process that's so different with the farm leagues. So I don't think it's a 1-to-1.
It'll be interesting when he's at his 3-year mark and then the NFL wants him and the MLB wants him.
Yeah, I'm nervous about it. Everything we've heard is that he prefers football and football is his passion. But young men change their minds.
Also, man, look at him out there. He's having a great time on the diamond, man. He's
too good of a time.
Yeah. you're looking angrily every to quit smiling in the dugout, man. We need you at safety, man. But yeah, that's a risk. But yeah, having Jonah Williams in a dime package would be sick. Because now you're just littered with athletes.
Otherwise, I would think they would put like. It just depends on the structure.
What do you need from defensive tackle out of this?
Out of this?
What are you looking for? If like, you know, we have questions at defensive tackle. Do you need killer defensive tackle play here? It always helps, but what is there any unique things you need out of this?
It's good if they're mobile and they are good at the slants and the loops that you do to move gaps and to create confusion so you can shoot linebackers and defensive backs into areas. Like the ideal way that this kind of thing works is that you have a defensive lineman cross the face of an offensive lineman and move gaps where he attacks. So the offensive lineman is going over here, and then the blitzer comes back to this side of him, and then he has to try to turn and pick up Anthony Hill with a head of steam, or turn and catch this nickel coming wide off the other edge, and it just can't happen.
Yeah.
So some lateral ability. Also, to do this well, your defensive linemen have to sell out. Like when you're slanting – you're like, I need you to work as hard as you can to get over here into this gap. And guess what? Your reward for that is going to be you get to help somebody else celebrate making a play. Georgia does this extremely well. Your guys need to be well-conditioned, and or you just need to sub them out so that your defensive linemen can maintain their motors with the extra movement and go really hard for like 20 snaps a game. And then get subbed out. Texas has the depth for this. I think their guys could do it well enough to make it work. But they have to buy into it.
So that's interesting. I think I can't remember what show it was. I think it was Charlie that I was talking to. But he was saying, man, in our recruiting defensive tackle, that he's hearing from the prospects of like, man, I could just go give 30 really good reps a game and get drafted. So it's cool that like that they're thinking that way. And it's one of the few positions that even thinks that way, you know. But you're worried you're going to have the cocky 5-star defensive tackle that's like, I could do 90 snaps per game. But the 17-year-olds now are like, man, I like Texas, man. I go hard for 30 snaps. I can get drafted. So that's cool. Georgia's been
doing. It's like all you got to do is give Kirby Smart 30 smart, hardworking reps, and then you'll get to go play for the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah. The Philadelphia Eagles specifically.
Specifically the Eagles.
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah, it is cool that the recruits are, like, seeing that and thinking like that now, because really that it's true. And we've seen that model work, man, with our six guys in the past 3 years have gone out. So it's not like we're selling something theoretical here. Like, we can show you exactly how this works. And it's better for your body, and it's better for your ability to play hard. Okay. You good with the Texas defense, what we probably want to see, what will fit personnel, potential pitfalls, all that kind of stuff?
Yep. That feels like we've covered quite a bit.
All right, cool.
Eventually I'll write how teams are going to attack us if we play this style. And then whenever I write that, we'll talk about it. Or maybe I'll talk about it on the Thursday show, depending on when I post that.
Get it up. Cool. All right, you ready to talk Texas A&M?
Let's do it.
Guys, the Fighting Aggies.
Fighting Texas Aggies.
Yep. So Ian just starts off breaking down the history, right? They paid a lot of money for Fisher. That wasn't a good idea. That Elko seemed like a good fit, and then Colin Klein also seemed like a good fit coordinator-wise.
Still might be.
I think he's a good fit. Like, I think
They are down on Colin Klein after last year.
I don't think they should be. I like what he did at Kansas State.
I thought he did it. Decent job last year at A&M. He had to navigate two completely different starting quarterbacks, very few weapons, totally new offensive line, and their star running back was injured for the year.
Yeah.
Like a third of the season left.
Yeah. But they weren't down on Elko, whose defense underperformed compared to NFL talent. All right.
I might be down on him pretty soon, too, I think.
They will be, but it's just like apply it across the board if you're mad at coordinators, you know? So this is Ian's Space Force, his idea. Every time I say it, he pays me $5. So we're trying to get it out there, Space Force. We're trying to get it marketed out there, Ian. We're trying to get this to veer and shoot levels of popularity here. What is the Space Force concept? What does that even mean when you say a team has this? Why is it even important to have?
The idea with Space Force is that there are certain positions on the field where you are necessarily going to be isolated in space in high stakes matchups. And if you don't have elite athletes at those positions, or like at least elite skill at those positions, then if you do have it, it's going to have a huge multiplier effect across your unit. And if you don't have it, then you're going to be totally doomed when you play a team that does.
Cool. So who's getting matched up one-on-one, right? A left tackle is going to be left on an island with an edge.
At least one of your tackles. It could theoretically be the right tackle, but obviously most teams use the left tackle.
Tackles are going to end up one-on-one with a freak athlete, a 6'4", 260-pound, could play basketball if he's taller type of athlete. Then also, who else is left on islands?
Well, the edge that goes across from him.
Mm-hmm. And then what? A corner and a receiver, receivers.
Outside receiver.
Yeah.
And then I started including defensive tackles in this equation too, which sort of belies the Space Force moniker. But I think defensive tackle is the second most important position in college football because – college football is way more run-oriented and quick pass-oriented. So the edge is marginalized in a way that he's not in, like, the NFL. Your defensive tackle has an impact on play-action throws over the middle. If he can get in the quarterback's face, he can blow that up. He can blow up runs. And he can screw up your numbers even against the quick pass. Because if you can defend the run with a light box, you can sit on quick passes, right?
Right.
So I think a defensive tackle has the most profound impact on a defense. And then on top of all of that, the elite defensive tackle, the planet, as he used to be called by he's the legendary boss of Bill Belichick.
Kraft?
Bill Parcells.
Oh, Parcells.
Bill Parcells had the planet theory, which is that there's a limited number of elite athletes who weigh 300 pounds or more on the planet. And you need to get as many of them as you can. Which is, that's the ethos of college football recruiting. And I define a planet level defensive tackle as a guy where if you don't block him with two people against the run, he'll screw up your runs. If you don't block him with two people against the pass, he'll screw up your pass. That's high level planet. That's the standard.
So how does
most teams might have one. No, most teams don't have that at all.
I'll say most teams have none of this.
The best teams and the best defensive tackles, you might find like one true planet type guy on a team.
Yeah. So how does A&M, so with this theory of guys that need to win one-on-ones and then including defensive tackles, they will also win one-on-ones if you get them. So does A&M match this criteria?
So left tackle, they have Trey Zun. Is that how you say his name? Zun. Sure. He's fine. I think he's adequate, if not good, at that level position. Outside receiver, they brought in Kevin Concepcion from NC State. Mm-hmm. Probably, I would say, kind of like Zun. He's not Jeremiah Smith, but he...
That's not a fair comparison.
Yeah, he could fit the bill.
Yeah.
I think he might be an upgrade over what they had last year. I kind of like Noah Thomas. But
I like Noah Thomas. I did.
He's good. I think that they're in better shape there overall. I think they got another guy too. Although, was the other guy?
Craver.
Craver's in the slot. I think maybe the other guy they got was the guy that went insane.
Oh, Hudson?
Hudson. Hudson? No, I thought it was.
We're talking about Micah Hudson when he was going to leave.
Yeah, Micah Hudson. Yeah. That was it. Still, Kevin Concepcion. That's good. Okay. Edge, they have Cassius Howell back. Mm-hmm. Again, solid. Not elite, but good.
I think he has elite potential. I think he's a good player.
I think we would see it by now if he was elite because he's been around a while. But he's good. He's a good player. Their freshman, Marco Jones. He was playing against, I don't know if it's any of their starting offensive linemen played in the spring game, but regardless, Marco Jones was completely dominant as an early enrollee freshman. I think probably he'll back up Howell and play on third downs will be his role, but watch out for that guy. I think he'll matter this year, and in future years, he looks like he might be awesome. Nose tackle. It's not exactly Space Force, but it's good to keep track of whether teams have good defensive tackles or not, since it's such an important spot. They brought back Albert Regis. He's solid. Defensive tackle is the spot where they seem most promising because they have DJ Hicks back. Mm-hmm. And
Onyedum from Iowa State.
Onyedum is solid. Onyedum is a guy, like if Texas had gotten Onyedum in the portal, he's probably not quite what they're looking for in the Texas scheme, but he's a good player. He would have been like, oh, good, that'd probably be okay at least. You got to get him. Hicks, I think, could be absolutely dominant. Hicks, again, backup offensive lineman, but every single freaking play I watched, Hicks was in the backfield in like 3 seconds and just ragdolling guards. He was a 5-star. They had to. I think he had like he was like an OU legacy.
And I don't know if he was a legacy, but it was between OU and A&M, and A&M seemed to kind of pull away towards the last minute. OU did not like that.
Yeah. And then he'd not done that much to date, but he's like finally, I think only just now a junior, if I'm not mistaken. He gained like 20 pounds this offseason, and he seems to be making one of those like leaps like Vernon Broughton or Alfred Collins made, you know? He's like, if you're going to point to one reason that A&M will be better this year than people think, my number one reason would probably be DJ Hicks.
Okay. And also a cornerback. Will Lee, who is
– He's good.
He's good, but he's like one of the – like he's an excellent trash talker. And he was like that at Kansas State too. He's super aggressive. He's like plays the psychological game, even probably going a little too far at times. But Will Lee's an interesting player, and he will rattle receivers because he's big too. So he can do all that, but he'll rattle receivers, man. He'll do little extra stuff after the whistle, nothing crazy, but just trying to get you out of your focus. So Will Lee's always a fun player. My eyes kind of draw to him after this, after the whistle, because he's putting in extra work to try to get receivers to like try to go too hard against him. And like we said, he's a big guy. And then the transfers too are interesting, right?
Des Ricks was there last year. I don't remember how that worked out for them. I think he was solid. Julian Humphrey pretty good. He was good at Georgia, and then he quit on them at the end of the year before the SEC championship game, which we were like, oh, sweet. This is an opportunity.
Yeah, sounds good.
And he went to A&M. I don't like that he did that, but Will Lee actually did that to Kansas State 2 years ago, which was also lame. And he's still pretty good. So apparently you can quit on your team and.
Well, it's not going to change here. It's not going to change your 40 time.
Well, like you'd like to think that the football gods would smite people like that, Homer, but the football gods are inconsistent in their applications of justice.
Yeah.
So that they are pretty good there.
Okay, so give me a grade, man. So like out of 1 to 10, what is A&M's Space Force ability?
They have good, not great answers at almost every spot. So, and then potentially game changers at D-tackle. I would say D-tackle and corner would be the most likely spots that they end up having game changers. So, 7 out of 10.
Okay.
I don't think you can go above 7 without a more meaningful weapon at receiver. Because I would say outside receiver is the most influential, most impactful spot. 6 or 7.
Okay.
And I'm a hard grader.
Yes.
Like, I'm not giving out. If you're a 10, you better be like 2019 LSU or something.
Right.
But we'll say 6.
Okay, so they return –
Some should do that for Texas too. What would Texas be?
So, okay. Edge, 9. Tackle. Edge
is great. Tackle is great. Gooseby. Corner Gooseby's is
going to be an early round NFL tackle, maybe a firster.
Corner is good. I wouldn't want to say elite.
I'd give corner a 6.
Receiver. We're kind of unsure. Potentially great, but.
Potentially 8, but maybe a 6.
Yep. Defensive tackle.
Too many questions. And definitely not. I mean, it's not going to be a Sweat and Murphy year. We know that. Let's get Sweat and Murphy or what? A 9?
It'd be like Murad Watson comes in and in the fall, they're like, holy crap, we can't block this guy.
Yes.
It's possible, but.
So 6 or 7 for tackle at the top, probably?
At the best.
Yeah.
We did corner, edge, tackle, receiver, offensive tackle.
Defensive tackle.
We gave A&M a 6. I would give Texas like a 7 probably.
Because of edge and tackle holding everything up?
Holding everything up.
Because our corners aren't that great. Our defensive tackles are unanswered, and our outside receivers are unknown. Potential high, unknown, though.
I would say 7 or maybe 8.
Us, 7 or 8?
If everything went right with some of these transfers, Muhammad makes a leap, potentially an 8.
Are we grading A&M by that metric? Then maxed out? Okay. As long as we're doing both potential max outs, that's fine. I just didn't want to grade A&M on reality and us on potential.
A&M has so many more, like, kind of known veterans. So they're a little more stable one way or the other. Texas has a wider beta because there's, like, just sophomore Syracuse transfer that may be awesome, but we haven't even seen.
Is Ryan Wingo going to ball out?
Is Ryan Wingo going to ball out? Is he going to pull his hamstring again?
Yeah.
There's a bunch of stuff like that.
Okay. Quarterback and safety. Bryce Anderson, Dalton Brooks. Man, we wanted both of these guys, Dalton Brooks and Bryce Anderson. I remember those recruitments were a lot of fun.
Yep.
Because this is when A&M brought the heat and signed everybody.
Yeah.
But they are bringing them back. Man, I remember how discombobulated they were in the secondary last year. They had no clue what was going on in the secondary last year. I remember watching the tape and be like, we're going to be just fine. So, but we know that no matter what, they're going to improve. We don't know how much they're improved, but they're going to improve at that position. And year one to year two makes a difference too. Remember Texas year one year versus year two? I mean, that's huge as well.
Elkup said at the end of the year, he's like, we can't play zone.
Dude, it's hilarious.
Run free.
Dude, they had no clue what was going on. It was like bad. Like even for first year, I was like, this is a little bit silly. But they should have a huge jump there just from year one to year two understanding.
Yeah. They should have a huge jump will almost definitely happen. Whether it takes them all the way into being like a really good defense, I don't know. But they won't be that bad again unless Elko just like has zero control of the program.
That couldn't happen. All right, Marcel Reed. So this is the real linchpin, really, right? A&M seems to feel really good about him. I really don't know a year where A&M didn't feel good about their quarterback going into it, but Reed's they're going to go as far offensively as Reed's going to go. We know he's an awesome athlete.
Elite athlete.
Yeah. And
he does amazing things.
Yeah. But not always great at playing quarterback, right? So it's like you gotta know what you're doing. You gotta know where the route's going. You gotta know your checkdowns, and you can't use this athleticism as an excuse to not stay on time. So even though we know you can roll out on a non-designed rollout, you should try to stay in the pocket and hit that intermediate read. No pun intended, but Reed has this issue of trying to play backyard football a lot of the time. And it can result in some incredible, frustrating, heartbreaking stuff if you're a defense against him. But as far as having the offensive coordinator throw his notepad on the ground, you'll do that too. Because basically, you're not running an offense. You're just playing read ball.
See, people – Vince Young has warped some Texas fans' understanding of how this works. If you are all improv and backyard ball and you don't ever do anything on time and within the structure of the offense, then the backyard ball just becomes a double-edged sword and you end up falling on it.
Yeah.
Like Vince Young, everybody forgets, Vince Young was a fourth-year player before he actually had a working mastery of the Texas offensive scheme. In 2004 – the year before the national championship, at one point in the year, they were just like, hey, let's just get in the eye and give it to Sid Benson a bunch of times because this is too much variation.
That's a good point. That's exactly what that style of play does. It creates incredibly high highs and incredibly low lows. Yeah. And those low lows normally come at the wrong time. So you're right.
Against the good defenses that have you well
prepped. Correct. And good coaches can't stand that, man. Sark has spent his whole life building this offense. He's not going to let you not run it. And that's how most coordinators are. Coaches want predictability and knowing the ball can go forward. Fans like the excitement of a Marcel Reed. But like we said, when it counts, that play style normally fails unless you pair this athleticism. Now you pair Reed's athleticism with understanding of the offense. Now you have a really scary player. But I don't know if we're going to see that scary player yet. So, here's a good way to get us unmonetized. But here we go.
Unmonetized.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he bails.
But also, where's the pressure here? Why? Is their receivers not open? Like, what's the why run here at all?
Because you can do this.
Right. You can, but it's like, what's the guy leaking out to the top? Is there anything there for him? The back tips.
Yeah, but no better than this. Like, yeah. for the vast majority of quarterbacks, you'd be like, take the check down, let the running back. Reed
can get you the 10 yards here.
The running back is a running back because he can do this. But Marcel Reed is the rare quarterback that can do this. So,
and you can see Ian with a half smile has a true appreciation of this style of quarterback if they can learn to throw.
Yeah, this is even – this is beyond even what I like the guy that can just make something happen. The quarterback does not need to be this athletic to be a good off-structure guy.
For sure. But also, like, if we're really grading hard here, he bails for no reason. I mean, I can't see down the field. I don't know the coverages, but it looks like he has some checkdowns. Like, he has a guy to the field that could get there and a back. Now, yes, he can run, but if we're talking about quarterbacking, he decides to run before he even does a hitch, dude.
Well, everybody drops back. Like, look how deep the linebackers are. But yeah. I'm totally okay with this. If you want, let's say your plan is we want Marcel Reed to end up carrying the ball 10 to 15 times a game, which might be kind of risky. He's pretty skinny, but probably that's more or less the plan.
Don't you make the awesome comparison, though, that he's like a Hooper driving?
Yeah.
Driving to the rim? Because, like, that was you, right, in the article?
Yeah.
Like, but can you see this? Look at this crossover. I mean, he looks like a basketball player.
Yes.
You know, like, imagine he's dribbling right now. And so it's like he has that level of athleticism. Like, he can cross you over like that.
He's the guard that looks for his own shot and is not setting up other people.
Yeah, exactly. He's not going to get a bunch of assists.
If you want him to get 10-plus carries anyway, this is a great way to get it, which is like you call a play, they drop everybody on defense way out, and then it just becomes a really easy draw.
Exactly. It just turns into a draw.
Yeah, that's great.
All right. What do we have here?
Just more improv ridiculousness. Look at that. He's definitely under pressure here. He's
definitely under pressure. He turns his hips well. I don't think that's crazy, man. I mean, he almost delivers that.
He did deliver it. It was caught.
Oh, he did? I couldn't even see it. So, like, yeah, that's the upside, right?
Like, he shouldn't even be trying this. You are, like, take the L. Live to see another play.
And then Why not? The guy's trailing. Why not throw that? There's nobody in front to get it.
Because the number of people that could turn and flip and get this throw off is like, the number of quarterbacks in college that could do this is probably could count on one hand. And he's one of them.
Yeah, but he's one of them, apparently.
He's one of them.
Yeah, so it's like, yeah, a normal guy wouldn't try it, but I just saw him do it. So that's the upside of Reed, right? To turn his hips that fast.
You wonder.
He didn't put it in danger. The guy's trailing. Like, if it goes incomplete, there's really no risk on it.
Well, the danger is when the other D-line is playing full speed and they're allowed to hit you.
Right here, they're going to smack you. Yeah.
Do they smack you when you're in motion and then you fumble and then they run it back for touchdown?
That's a hell of a play, though. Are you sure they connect on that? I swear that it bounces at the end. Yeah, I don't think it's complete, but it's still
pretty sure
it's not incomplete or complete based on him. So yeah, but just to be able to run out, sprint out like that, flip his hip at the last second and throw that's an impressive play. But Ian points out with the high highs of Marcel Reed, there's some low lows. So, Ian, you were telling me this too. It looked like he was looking down at his play sheet every chance he could.
It's in the next image in the article.
Yeah, right here.
It just kept cutting over and over again to him doing that.
Yeah. So
you're right. They didn't break it up.
Yeah. But that doesn't change that Marcel.
You put it on.
Yeah.
Again, this I really got a kick out of because this is Ezekiel's wheel. And the wheel was wide open. They don't cover it.
right there. He
rolls out and he takes forever to see it. Yep. By the time he throws it, the offensive line is maybe ineligible downfield, and the defense has picked up the wheel route with the safety.
And he's also doing this like you made a good point on the last play. He's letting these big guys get too close to him. So it's like you said, his guys aren't going to hit him. But you can't be tempting this nose right there not to kill you after you throw the ball, especially if you're going to be a running quarterback. You're going to be absorbing a bunch of hits. So that'll be the trick too. He's kind of standing really tall on these rollouts versus big bodies that one cheap shot can change the season. And we know A&M's quarterback situation changes on a dime every year.
I don't even know what he's looking at here. It's like,
I don't either, because he's not even close, and the ball's not even close to complete. Yeah, so not much there, and he takes way too long to see it.
The ideal of Ezekiel's wheel is that you run a zone play to one side, but then you quick hit a defense with three guys to the short side of the field in like rapid succession, and so you don't. It's hard to cover them all, and then still defend the zone. It's not a rollout.
Right. So but there's something about his athleticism. Everything becomes a rollout.
Everything becomes a rollout because, well, I don't, yeah, it's that's his comfort zone.
Exactly. He wants to like move and throw. What do we got here? We got another looking wheel. Yeah. So this is the downside of being overly confident.
I don't know how well you can see it, but he does the ball pat deal for timing.
Yeah.
I've heard quarterbacks brag about how that helps them sync up their timing. Mm-hmm. But
this throws all arm. Like, his arm's decent here because he's not hitching properly. Now, also, he's not hitching because he has guys in his face. So hitching there, I admit.
Yeah, DJ Hicks is there.
Yeah, you're gonna hitch right into getting that. So the arm's not bad here because he's not hitching. I mean, this is all arm right there. It's all arm to a defender, but it's not bad rotation that he's able to get there, apparently.
The problem is that he takes too long. So if it takes too long to see the window, and then after he sees the window, he still has to go through his whole ball pat load and fire routine,
and he's not looking anything off. So when you're sitting in zone, you're watching him throw that ball.
So the linebacker gets under it and picks it off.
Yeah, because they're watching him.
It's pretty bad when a linebacker gets under a corner route like that.
Sure.
That's that should not be happening.
But before we look at a couple more plays, guys, let's hear a word. I'm David McClellan.
I'm just going to say, guys, you probably need a fiduciary financial advisor. And I've got the guy for you. His name is David McClellan with Forum Financial. He works broadly and deeply with his clients as a financial life coach. And he should know something about coaching because he won several national championships as a swimmer for the University of Texas. He specializes in financial planning and has contributed numerous articles to Kipling on the topic of retirement tax bombs. So contact David today to be your fiduciary financial planner and schedule a one-hour consultation to assess your financial situations. The free consultation is available, so just give him a call. The number is 312-933-8823. That's 312-933-8823. His email is also in the description below.
All right, so he throws a ball he shouldn't have. And notice, like, that's the one, too, where he's just sitting in the pocket. So the thing with Reed is I'll go back and watch the spring game for them. I want to see how often he does a three-step drop, a full hitch, when he has room. I'm not going to ding him because he has nose tackles in his face. But whenever he has the time to stay in the pocket and deliver the ball, is he doing that? My suspicion would be no, that he's going to try to improvise or make something happen or force something.
To me, he looks way too much like the same guy he was before he got a private jet deal. You worry that Reed will be one of those guys that is not motivated enough to get better at what they need to get better at because they're already getting all the rewards that are supposed to come after.
Yeah, but what are the real private jet deals? Like, they're not getting a private jet. You know, they're just doing like a marketing for a private jet firm. I'm sure they get a couple flights, but they're not like they're not actually getting a private jet.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like it's very much a marketing. It's a marketing thing.
Well, if you read the tweet that I embedded, half the tweet is justifying why you would let a college athlete have a private jet deal.
Yeah.
And it's all like, this is about sharing stories oriented around increasing organ donations that will save lives.
Yeah.
So they it's like almost like they like his job is to be fly around to get organs to people.
yeah, I'm sure.
It's completely ridiculous. You can tell that they know that it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
They're just trying to justify it.
Yeah. It's it's fun. All right, so now you have kind of what like the mimicry of the RPO here, but then they just turn it into like what Q follow.
This is nasty. Except you'll notice that he turns the wrong way.
Exactly. I was going to say his handoff is not correct.
They don't have the playbook on the private jet.
Yeah.
He's reading something else. But yeah, this design is nasty because again, the idea with Ezekiel's wheel is that you're flooding a zone with three receivers while running a zone play the opposite direction.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to get everybody to either spot. And then if you do that, but then the zone play ends up being a lead overrun quarterback run to like one of the fastest, quickest kids in college football.
Talk about flooding the zone. Now you've like triple flooded the zone, dude. There's the bodies over there to handle that.
Now, the only problem with it is that I never saw them convert Ezekiel's wheel a single time in the spring game. And even on this
play, doesn't matter. The teams are still going to play the concept. You know,
I don't know.
It's like play action. They've proven that you don't actually have to run successfully to execute play action. They've done that in the NFL. The whole concept of like you have to set up the play action is actually not true. And I think this is what it is because everybody's operating off of keys or their zone. So it's like they're still going to play the concept.
If it's Colin Simmons is down blocked end and you can't hit Ezekiel's wheel worth a lick, I think you're going to have trouble executing this against Colin Simmons.
Well, I'm not. Yeah, Colin Simmons is going to be a little bit different, but I'm talking about just your average bear. But look, Marcel Reed, there's no question here. This is a great Marcel Reed play. He misses the handoff to the wrong side, but then it doesn't matter. He goes and gets like 15 yards. I think that's if you have to look at like a single play of what Reed is right now, that's it. Is it in line with professionals? So he's going to frustrate you. I mean, there's going to be plays where like it's third and 14 and you have A&M in your sights and then he's going to score. But there's also when they're in the red zone, he's going to try to force something intermediate and get picked. And Texas might be the one of the few people with the pass rush to contain this. So there's that side of it too.
They're not going to be good unless he's running the ball 10 plus times.
Correct. And we know their quarterback luck, man. Like, can get hurt. And he's not a huge guy, right? There's not a lot of armor on him. He's pretty tall and skinny. So there's that regard, too, of running him a bunch. Now, the upside of running him a bunch is you're going to win a couple more games than you would. So how do you feel? This is Texas A&M's fate next year. Will come down to whether or not Reed can hold up with the heavy workload in the run game. And also not just the run game, right? He's going to take off on half of his passes on top of that. So can he get out of bounds or is he adding 10 hits a game because he's scrambling on top of real quarterback run?
My understanding is that the private jet is fully loaded with protein shakes.
So he'll be all good?
But he's still like, you take a picture, look at the picture of him, like looking at his wristband every time.
Yeah.
Trying to remember what the play's supposed to be. And he's a hard gainer, as they say.
Yeah. Another key factor is outside receiver Concepcion from NC State. Can he and the skilled players present Reed with a lot of easy reads and throws to make him look better as a passer? That's going to be crucial. And then whether or not Reed can develop with Klein over this offseason to be an effective game manager and harness his impromptu playmaking as a value-add proposition rather than a double-edged sword. So when you have a player like Reed, man, a lot of this is going to come down to coaching and using him, like putting him in a ton of advantages. Like, you don't want to put him in situations where you know he's going to take off and do something silly. That's the tricky part. So what a lot of, man, a lot of like Mario Craver crossers right across his face, allow him to roll out with it. That would stuff would be helpful. Maybe go wide a lot so you do leave the draw wide open for him up the middle. But you're not gonna want to go pure progression passing and a ton of drop back here.
Mesh is going to be de facto quarterback draw for this guy. While they're playing man coverage, that means I can just take off up the middle and run on guys who turn their backs.
Yeah. But it's up to Klein to be honest with himself where they're at too, right?
Well, now, it's up to Reed.
Well, Reed, and I said, and the point with Reed is like he can't break the play every time. He's going to have to play quarterback too, right?
He hit one play in the spring game where they motioned Concepcion to give him leverage to run a quick out at the snap, and Reed nailed it on time. There needs to be a lot more of that.
But that's what you want to see.
Yeah. Needs to be a lot more of that. If they can do that a bunch of times a game, get Le'Veon Moss or somebody else healthy for the run game, run the crap out of the ball, run Reed 10 times a game.
While also letting Reed.
You're adding up to something that's going to work and it's not going to crush you with a lot of decision making.
Well, and also too, right, like I kind of talked about, there's this like thing as a coach of like restraining Reed. Sure. But you also don't want to take away what makes Reed special too. So it's this really fine line of like, make sure that he's playing quarterback, but also let him do his Vince Young stuff if he wants to, man. So that's kind of going to be the trick, I think. So how do you feel after looking at Texas A&M? Where do you feel improved, much improved? Where do you think they're going to be at this year?
Well, what did their record end up being last year?
8-4, right?
I feel like they'll be better. I'm trying to remember what the schedule is. Being better doesn't necessarily mean your
wins go up.
Your wins go up. Although the schedule should be pretty similar to last year.
They had the second to last weakest schedule. We had the weakest.
Yeah. All right, here it goes. UTSA. They should beat UTSA, but that's actually
– it's always a real test.
It's a little tricky. Utah State at home. Both those games are at home. That's actually not – that team can sometimes be a little pesky too. At Notre Dame.
We'll know what's up there.
Bye week. Auburn at home. Mississippi State at home. Florida at home, at Arkansas, at LSU, bye week, at Missouri, South Carolina, SEC bye against Samford, and then at Texas.
They're playing some teams, man.
Yeah, they could be better and still only
8-4 here. Yeah.
But let's say 9-3. Let's see. I bet they could get to 9-3. Maybe even 10-2 if everything goes right. I don't think Reed is ready for
the big show.
I don't think Reed is ready for 10-2. Maybe if they do and they get in the playoffs, I would be looking to short them fast.
So
the playoff defense is going to eat him apart.
Because if your decision making is already bad, it's only going to erode generally in those high leverage situations
against a super well prepared team that's scouted all your dumb tendencies. Yeah.
Cool. Chat, thank y'all. Thank you. It was fun going through our defense and then looking at A&M, what they're going to be able to do. We are going to have no basketball show today. Shout out Keenan. He had a team. And then we're going to have Wednesday night live. So y'all tune in this evening and y'all can come hang out. This was IT Live brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors. Later, y'all.